Hello, everybody, and welcome back to East Coast Haunts. I'm MK.
And I'm Sam.
And we have a really fun haunt for you guys today. It's actually technically not haunted, but I think all of you fans of the podcast, you know, you like a little bit of like the macabre, and this is going to be right up your alley. And this is definitely on my bucket list to go here, but especially because I'm like semi-local to the area. But before we get to that, before we tell you where we're headed today, I have some like housekeeping items to share, and one of them is like a really fun story regarding like paranormal activity and actually relates back to one of our episodes. Okay. And Sam has not heard this story, so this is going to be her genuine reaction. But first things first, to all of you who are not Patreons, we love you just the same, but now's a good time to join because we have officially booked our hotel room for Halloween Horror Nights 2024. Our Halloween Horror Nights was definitely like a fan favorite series on our Patreon. We just wrapped up our like international cryptids, which was really fun, but now we're heading into our favorite season of the year. And if you want, you know, backgrounds on all the houses, and obviously, you know, inside information from the event itself, we're going bigger and we're going for longer this year. We're bringing one extra guest. And so you guys, we're raffling off a ticket. Just kidding. we're bringing avid fan of the podcast and also my boyfriend, Zach. So you guys will meet him soon. He's really excited. He definitely matches Sam and I's freak when it comes to Halloween Horror Nights. So he's going to get into it. We'll all be into it. And we're definitely going to start that series on our Patreon quite soon. But you guys should know we've booked our tickets. We're going to the event this year. And we could not be more excited.
Yes. Agreed. All of the
and,
above.
And if you see us there, hit us up for some East Coast Haunt stickers and potentially friendship bracelets.
Definitely friendship bracelets. You know that carabiner will be full.
We'll be jingling our way around the park.
Give me your paranormal now story that. Quite curious.
Yes, I know. I've been kind of keeping you on the edge of your seat because I want to build suspense. So, let me start by saying, I know I mentioned last episode. So last episode, we covered the Chester River Inn in Kent Island. And I mentioned that my parents live down in like a development in Kent Island. And one of their neighbors is actually a fan of the podcast. And she listens to us. She's a Kent Island native. So she's been, you know, has grown up there, lived there her whole life. And was, you know, just in passing mentioned to my mom that we were actually, or the article that we referenced for our last episode was incorrect. The old Chester River Inn was not in fact the place that's haunted. They switched it up with Chesterfields, which is the old Castle Marina Inn, which is the old, like the restaurant, the like refurbished restaurant that is at the entrance to my parents' development. So I have actually been to this inn like several times. We go there almost every Friday when we're down, and it's very interesting. So your mom, I think we mentioned this last episode, but both of our moms who are sisters used to live there with our grandparents when they were younger. And Sam's mom used to waitress at this haunted restaurant, Chesterfields. Yes. And even back then, like, I think there were some rumors floating around that it was haunted. And basically, the story goes among the patrons of the establishment that there is a ghost named Sarah who was in charge of them. She was married to, like, the marina master, the harbor master. And I can't remember his name, but one night he went out during a storm to, like, help a ship dock, and he never came back. So she was always said she wasted away in the attic. She, like, starved to death. Very sad. I know, but people can say that they see her walking like the widow's walk, like pacing the widow's walk, waiting for her husband to come home. A classic maritime ghost story, if you will. But here's the paranormal story. So I was not there, but my parents were sitting at this restaurant called the Poor House, and that is what used to be Chesterfield/the Castle Marina Inn. And they were eating dinner, and all of a sudden they hear like a big crash from behind the bar, like someone dropped a tray full of glasses. And so they like looked over and they like didn't see anyone there, but like obviously someone had just dropped a tray, you know, waitress head tripped or whatever. So my mom, a couple minutes later, goes to the bathroom. She like bumps into a lady who's also eating at the restaurant, and just as Maryland people are, was very friendly and was like, oh, well, let me walk you to the bathroom just in case Sarah strikes again. So my mom was like, okay, doesn't think anything of it. So then my mom was like, then she's like walking back to the bathroom with this lady. She's like, okay, what did you mean by like when Sarah strikes again, like is Sarah the waitress? And the lady was like, oh no, Sarah's the ghost that haunts this establishment. And my mom was like, okay. So she's, I mean, my mom's got a daughter that has a paranormal podcast, you know, she's open to that kind of stuff, but I wouldn't say that she actively goes around like looking for ghosts. So my mom's like, this place is haunted? And she was like, yeah, you know, like, I'm sure you heard Sarah earlier. She knocked over a whole tray of glasses. And my mom was like, what do you mean? She was like, I don't know if you could see it from like where you were sitting, but there was no one near that tray of glasses. And it completely flew off the bar as if someone had slid it off. No one was standing over there. And like a bunch of people had like saw it happen. But apparently this is just like an everyday occurrence. I've never seen anything happen there, but apparently this lady, this patron, has seen it once or twice. Now my mom has seen, or at least heard it. And so my mom was like, yeah, they were in the bathroom together, like, you know, just like chatting it up still. And the lady was telling her all about like who Sarah was and like the whole backstory about like the widow's walk and whatnot. And my mom was like, are you gonna tell me that you're Sarah? And the lady was like, no, my name's like something else, but isn't that funny? My name's, you know, Joan.
So yeah, it honestly, it would be such like the ending of a movie if then Joan walked away and disappeared and they were like, there was no one else in the bathroom with you. That would be like the ultimate ending. So, wow. It's so interesting how casual it is to everyone else who has, I guess, encountered Sarah at the restaurant before. Like, that's crazy. So
I know. Isn't that wild?
She's still causing mischief. I do have a question. Did your mom plug Joe to the bathroom lady?
She did. Yes. She said, my daughter and my niece have a paranormal podcast called East Coast Haunts, and you should check it out. And the lady said, only if Sarah's on it. My mom said they actually just did an episode of On Her. And then, you know.
God.
Isn't that funny?
Well, I guess we're going to have to go there.
We did reach the Ken Islanders. There.
Good. Woohoo! We're going to have to go there when I visit, obviously.
100%. Obviously, we'll bring our little like spirit box and our dowsing rods and see if we can get anything on tape.
Our waiter might think we're a freak, but I feel as if it's worth it.
I agree.
Okay, very cool. That was a very good story. I was so curious about what your supernatural story was going to be, but I'm quite impressed, I will say.
I hope it did not disappoint.
Not at all. So, okay, all right. Any other housekeeping?
I know there was something else that I have, and I'm sure I'll remember it later, but not right now.
Okay, because I remember, I feel like I also remember you saying there was something else, but I don't know.
I definitely wanted to correct about the old episode. I wanted to tell you guys about the paranormal story firsthand account. I wanted to tell you that we're going to Halloween Horror Nights. But I, you know what? I'll probably remember it by the end of the episode. So, I'll add it on there.
Okay, perfect. Okay. So then I guess we should get into the meat and potatoes.
Yes. The main course, if you will, entree.
Yeah. I've never used that phrase before, so I don't know what possessed me to do that, but I didn't really like it. So Today, we are going to the Mütter Museum in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. So, before we even get started, let's go over the pronunciation because...
Okay, please.
I've heard it pronounced Mütter, 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 and I did not want to get it wrong. So this is directly from the museum's website. It says, quote, "The U in Mütter has an umlaut. In German, the U, with like the two little dots on top, is properly pronounced with an E-O sound. We are just as happy if you pronounce it with a long U sound like scooter." So Mütter. I'm just going to say Mütter. Yeah. Because I feel like it would be Mütter, but I can't quite figure out what an E-O sound is. Like Mütter? Like Mütter?
Yeah. Mütter. Mütter. I really don't know. I'm not German in the slightest, so.
Neither am Beats I. Me. So I'm just going to go with what they said with scooter, so I'm just going to call it Mütter.
All right, thank you for clearing that up, because I was a little bit stressed out when I was, like, writing it out. I was like,
I know, same. I was like, oh.
I did just remember my other piece of information that I wanted to share. My last little housekeeping. So I have a best friend from middle school, and she just recently was in Philly. So this still ties back into Philly. So if you are, like, on a haunted or, like, historic tour of Philly, definitely make sure to check this out. She and her friends for 4th of July were in Philadelphia, and her name is Katie, and she went into the Philadelphia Free Public Library, and they just went into her room and saw this, like, taxidermied raven, and someone told them that it was Charles Dickens, like, pet raven. So
what?
Isn't that interesting? I just thought that was interesting, like, another fun little Philly fact for all, like, I know that's not, like, technically horror, but I thought that it was, like, macabre enough to share on the pod.
Yeah, especially because it kind of reminds me of, like, Edgar Allan Poe, quote the raven.
Yes, exactly.
That's so interesting. Who knew that? Was it common to have a pet raven back then, or was he just, like, a little quirky guy?
No idea. No clue. But
okay, Charles Dickens. That's actually really cool. It's kind of cute in a way.
Interesting. So anyway, I felt like that was East Coast haunty enough to share.
Well, it was on the East Coast. Philly. Well, yeah, especially with Philly. I know, it kind of ties right in. So, okay, very interesting. After you leave the public library, you can go to the Mütter Museum, which is, of course, named after Thomas Dent Mütter. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about him before we get into the history of the museum itself. Thomas Dent Mütter was born in 1811. He died in 1859, and he was an American surgeon that was from Richmond, Virginia. He attended Hampton Sydney College in Virginia, and then he graduated from UPenn with an MD in 1831. Very smart guy, smart, of course.
Yeah.
He, at the age of 30, this part is crazy to me, at the ripe young age of 30, I guess ripe and young don't go together. So at the young age of 30, he became the chair of surgery at Jefferson Medical College, which is,
oh my God.
Yeah. So he was, obviously you can tell from this, he died fairly young. Let's see, 59 minus 11 is what, 48? I hope that's right. I don't know.
Yeah.
Phew, okay, that would have been embarrassing. So he was only 48 when he was only 48 when he died, which is very young. But especially for today's standards, but I think even for the 1800s, I would say 49 was fairly young, right?
Yeah, I would say so. Usually they made it to, like, their late 50s, I would think.
So even though he didn't live a super long life, he was very successful for the vast majority of it, because he was the chair of surgery when he was 30 years old. Like, that's crazy.
That's crazy.
So in his time as a doctor, he operated on hundreds and hundreds of patients. And he was actually the first surgeon in Philadelphia to administer ether anesthesia. Do you know what ether energy is? Like,
I
as
do.
Opposed to. Okay, can you explain? Because I actually don't really know what it is.
Yeah, so ether was, I believe, just off the top of my head, it was an inhalant that acted as like a form of anesthesia.
Oh, yeah. Okay, you're right.
And as opposed of it being like an intravenous, but I let me verify that really quickly. I think that's what it was.
I know.
Ether in chloroform.
That was impressive that you got that, because I literally had no idea, and I was like, just ask her.
thank you.
And he also operated on patients to repair deformities. So he was very, ooh. I don't want to say he was like technically plastics, but I guess it was plastic surgery, right? So he was, and then also he was very well known for this thing called the Mütter flap, which of course is named after him, Mütter, which was used to treat burn victims. And it's like a grafting procedure.
Oh, interesting.
I guess to cover up like burnt skin, which is really cool because it's actually still used today, like however many years, like 200-ish years later, it's still used.
That's crazy.
Yeah, so kind of actually really cool. He was a really successful guy. If you look at a picture of him, he, to me, looks like Sacha Baron Cohen, like so much. So I'm sure that'll be on the Instagram. But there's like this one picture of him. It's the first one that you look at when you see it. He looks so much like him to me. And almost maybe a little bit like Paul Rudd. I don't know. So
all right, hold on, let me look.
Yeah, I know you, and now you kind of
I will
have
give
to.
You a perfect. All right, let me see.
And also Sacha Baron Cohen, for those who don't know. For those unfamiliar.
Oh my god, he does.
Right? I was like, because I was curious what he looked like, and so I went on Google, and I was like, whoa, why does he look
That's
like
That's crazy.
I know.
He does.
So
he does look, he looks like Borat.
He's like, they're nice. So.
He did say that. I can confirm.
I believe he did say that also. So the Mütter Museum was founded on December 11th, 1858, thanks to a generous donation from Dr. Mütter. The museum originally was an educational resource that was exclusively open to medical professionals, students, and invited guests of college fellows. It wasn't actually until the mid-1970s that the museum opened its doors to the general public. So for over 100 years, it was only for medical professionals and students and the guests that they invited.
Interesting.
The College of Physicians of Philadelphia is not a teaching institute, even though it sounds like it would be. It's actually like a member organization full of course, physicians and doctors who are dedicated to advancing science. anyway, the Mütter Museum itself has an insanely large collection of specimen. It has 37,000 different specimen. Guess, if you can guess, Mary-Kate, as of 2023, what percent of these items are on display in the museum itself?
Okay, the way that you're saying that makes me think it's going to be like an extremely high or an extremely low number.
Yeah.
Okay, so let me talk you through my reasoning here.
Okay.
I'm thinking it's going to be a very low number, but I'm also hesitant to say that because we did just talk about the International Cryptids Museum, and I think there was something crazy like 100,000 items on display. So,
oh, go with your instinct though. Go with your instinct.
Okay, so maybe like 15%.
That was very close. Yeah. Out of the 37,000 specimen, there's only 10% that are on display right now,
ooh,
which I thought was so interesting because this museum is like, it's pretty big, like, and full of stuff. So like the fact that 90% of the specimen are not even on display, just like it goes to show how much they have to look through and to research, which I think is really cool. And I know you're going to go over the exhibits and like,
Sorry, it makes you wonder, like, what they're not showing to the public. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, especially
because... What do they have that they're not showing?
Some of the exhibits are, like, a little bit, like, disturbing. So it's like, oh, gosh, like, what are they... Yeah, what are they not showing? Like, what's... And also, I also... This might be, like, a silly question, but, like, where do they keep it all? I guess, like, in a different building, but it's, like...
The archives.
Yeah, the archives. So, yeah. Huge, huge collection. Only a little bit of it is on display, but that little bit fills up an entire big museum. So, pretty cool. The museum's collection grew. Obviously, it started off with the donations from Mütter, but it grew through acquisitions from around the world. There was a curator named Ella Wade, who served from 1939 to 1957. And she said, quote, "The Mütter Museum Committee, as the minutes show, proceeded to spend Dr. Mütter's money like sailors on shore leave." So basically just saying, like, once he, like, gave the money and was like, "Hey, like, here's the money for the museum, like, here's my stuff, like, I want to help the museum," they went and, like, they just bought so many different items, like, from around the world to put into the museum. Which, like,
that's, like, my new favorite saying, spending money like sailors on shore leave. That's,
I know. Isn't that funny? I was like, that was a good one. Also kind of crazy that there was, like, that, like, there was, like, a female curator for that long. Like, I feel like,
yeah.
Again, I could be wrong, but it seems like it definitely probably wasn't as common back then. So kind of cool. Go Ella. Now, the Mütter Museum was awarded a grant from the Pew Research. Oh, I'm sorry, from the Pew Center for Arts and Heritage back in October, this past October, 2023.
Oh, wow.
And the grant funds research into the history of the museum's human remains. Because as you know, a lot of, like, museums, like, it's very dicey how they received their artifacts, or especially when they're, like, human remains. It's like, were they obtained ethically?
Where did these come from?
Yeah, or were they taken from, like, you know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of dicey area. So this grant was given to them, and they're hoping that it will help. The money will help to uncover the origins of each specimen in their collection. And it'll also help to foster discussion about the museum and its future. Because I'm sure they're still going to want to continue to collect specimen, but I assume they also probably want it to be in a way that is respectful to the people that are, of course, deceased, whose remains will end up in the museum. You know what I mean? Like, you want to make sure that it's something that they would have wanted, rather than it being something that, like, people who are alive are just going to, like, profit off of.
Yeah.
That's
actually really, like, good for them.
Yeah, I agree. I think it would be so easy to just kind of, like, sweep it under the rug and for them to be like, oh, you know, like, we've had these for hundreds of years, like, we don't know where they came from, like, you know, like, it's impossible to track. But I have to say, it's, like, impressive that they're, like, going out of their way to find out where everything comes from, and I guess making sure it, I mean, if things were taken unethically, though, like, I'm curious to see, like, how they would remedy that, if they would at all. But it was just kind of interesting, I thought.
That is interesting. Actually, I did read something. So a while back, I'm sure you guys remember because we did the Skull Room episode, but my friends and I went to Nashville, and while we were there, we did a tour of the Parthenon, and there was a whole exhibit there about, like, how especially, like, cultural artifacts are sometimes sourced unethically, and they're taken from, like, either the tribal groups or the ethnic groups that they originally belonged to, obviously through unethical practice. And so it's very interesting to see how many museums around the world are actually offering artifacts that they had previously in their possession, like, back to their original owners and, like, their rightful owners. Mm-hmm. So it's good on the Mütter Museum for doing this.
Yeah, it's definitely, like, a new thing. Like, people are, I feel like, just starting to, a lot of places are just starting to acknowledge it and starting to, you know, repair and give the artifacts back to people they belong to. So and so actually the first town hall discussion discussing, like, you know, like the history of the human remains and like where they're going to go. That happened on November 17th of last year. So it's getting started, but it looks promising. And that's kind of the general history of it. But I think the real interesting part that everyone's going to be here for is hearing about the exhibits, because they're very fascinating. I actually did, I know you said this is on your bucket list. This is on my bucket list to go again, because I actually did go.
Oh, did you?
Yes. So I want to say I think it was my senior year of college. In fact, I think it definitely was my senior year of college, because I feel like it was like our graduation weekend and like we were looking for something to do. And my mom found this museum and she was like, oh, this is cool. And we went, but I think I would appreciate it more now, because I think I went in not knowing what it was. And then when it was like kind of jarring when I went in, and I was like, oh, like, wow, this is a lot. It's kind of heavy. So I would love to go back now that I feel like I'm like a little bit older. I think I'm not wiser, but I just think it'd be interesting to go now that I'm like, it's like three and a half years later. I'm so interested to go again. So,
Come up and visit me. We can definitely go, because I really want to go here.
Yeah, make a weekend out of it. And what I do remember is it was like so interesting. I was like, I remember feeling like rut. Like if we had like 2 hours to go through, I remember being like, oh, like I could have easily spent like 4 or 5 hours in there, like actually reading through everything. So, gonna have to go again.
Well, let me tell you about some of the exhibits. I would say some of their most popular exhibits and some of the ones that they're most famous for. But like you said, the museum like has in possession approximately 37,000 specimens. Yeah. But not nearly all of them are on display. The place, while technically not haunted, a lot of people claim to have feelings of like nausea, dizziness, vertigo, like a general sense of unease. But that's probably due to what is being displayed, because it's all like medical anomalies, anatomical marvels, things like that. And according to the Travel Channel, they created a list of the creepiest places on Earth. Do you want to guess where this museum ranks?
Oh,
I'll give you a hint. It's in the top 20.
Ooh, I'm gonna say it's like number 5.
It is number 7 on the list of the creepiest places on Earth.
On Earth?
On Earth.
I mean, it is. It is definitely. It's creepy, but it's also because it's like they were real people. You know what I mean? Like, you'll see. It's like, it kind of like humanizes like all these different diseases that people, like, especially in like the olden days, like used to like gawk at. It like humanizes them, and it's like, hey, like these were real people who had these medical conditions.
It's like
it wasn't
medical
like
issue. Yeah,
it wasn't like some creepy, spooky, like, ooh, you know what I mean? I that's probably explaining it horribly, but
no, I do agree with you. I like, a lot of the time people with these sort of disorders and diseases were treated as like, this is a horrible comparison, but like a circus sideshow act.
Yeah.
And this museum, from what I can tell, the way that they describe these exhibits does a really good job at humanizing them. And like you were saying, making sure people know that these are like actual people and not, they're not defined by their disease. So,
but also at the same time, I'm so sorry. I was just going to say, also at the same time, no, I see why it ranked so high on the list, because there are a lot of dead bodies in there. A lot of dead bodies in there.
Mm-hmm. And that doesn't begin to even scrape the surface. So, speaking of dead bodies, let's start off with discussing some of their osteological or their skeletal specimen. They have over 3,000 skeletal specimen. One of the most popular ones that people come from all over to see is the Mutter American Giant, and is the tallest human skeleton on display in North America. Do you want to take a guess at how tall it is?
I'm going to say 7'2".
So close. It's 7'6" tall.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy? If you like now, I guess I actually have no concept of this, but I would think that like there's definitely some professional basketball players that like are in the 7 feet, but like 7'6" is, that's like that's over 2 feet taller than like I currently stand. And I tend to think of myself as like decently tall.
So 7.5. Yeah, I honestly, I can't even fathom that.
I can't conceptualize how tall, like, how 7.5. You have to duck to, like, walk through doorways. So, that's kind of crazy. Okay.
I don't even remember seeing that, which is why I need to go again.
Yes, you definitely need to go, because there's some stuff in here that I think has rotated in semi-recently that you're definitely going to want to see. So in addition to that, they have the skeleton of Harry Raymond Eastlack, who was a man that suffered, and give me a break on the pronunciation. I don't have any medical background. Fibrodysplasia ossificans progressive. More commonly known as FOP. And it's a disease in which muscles, tendons, and ligaments spontaneously like turn into bone.
Oh.
Crazy? So think of your entire musculatory system just turning into bone. So like if you like put your hands on your thighs right now and like squish down, that's all bone. Yeah. Would be a horrifying disease.
I didn't even know that was like possible.
Yeah, not to make all you hypochondriacs out there nervous with this information.
Yeah.
But it is the only medical condition that's known where one organ system changes into another. There's no known cure for this.
How old was he when he died?
I'm not 100% sure. I couldn't find it. Yeah.
Wow.
So definitely that's I did see pictures of the skeleton though. It's very interesting to see. There's also on display Harry Raymond Eastlack.
Okay. Okay, I'm just going to look him up, but continue.
So there's also on display, they're called the Hyrtle Skulls, and I'm not even sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly. It's HYRTL, and it's a collection of 139 skulls that were amassed by a Viennese anatomist, Hyrtle. And each skull has information on the age, origin, and cause of death of the person whose skull it is. And his whole hypothesis or theory was that cranial features can be evidence of the person's intelligence after death, their personality traits, and racial differences. So he was saying just from a person's skull and like minor differences in their cranial features, you can tell like how smart a person was, how outgoing they are, like what ethnic background they had, which is a really neat thing to think about, because if you or me are just looking at a skull, like we wouldn't be able to tell that for anything, you know, a skull is a skull, but he was able to identify such slight differences in these features and like come up with a more accurate profile of the person in their life.
I actually do remember this exhibit so clearly, and it's like a huge, huge glass wall of skulls. Actually, I don't know if it's glass, but there were so many skulls, and you get to, like you said, you get to read like when they died, how they passed away, like where they were from. It's so interesting.
It sounds like a very, I want to say jarring, but also like, I definitely would like to see it, you know? I think that's like this place I would wrap up in like one term is like morbid curiosity. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
So in addition to this osteological specimen group, there's also a group of wet specimen, which is like either preserved, you know, like preserved soft tissue. So they have on display a man named Roger Pendarvis's heart, and he was affected by acromegaly, which is an overproduction of your growth hormone. So this heart is like absolutely massive. Like it is a very big heart. Yeah. In addition to that, they have intestines from victims of the 1949 cholera outbreak.
Oh.
Which, if you don't know, like affects cholera is like a disease that it's a waterborne illness that like affects your bowel movements. That's like the lightest way I can possibly put that.
Yes.
They have tattooed skin from the 1800s, as early as the 1800s.
That one really grosses me out for some reason. Like skin.
For some reason. Skin freaks me out too. Like it reminds me of Silence of the Lambs.
Oh yes, you know what? Maybe that's why. Because I was somehow like the heart, like in the wet specimen of the heart, is like less, like creepy crawly to me than the skin.
Totally, I completely agree with you. They also have a couple of celebrity tissue samples. They have a tumor that was removed from Grover Cleveland's palate.
Why?
They have the conjoined liver of the famous Siamese twins Chang and Eng. They have a piece of thoracic tissue from John Wilkes Booth, who was the assassin of Abraham Lincoln.
That was random, but interesting.
I know, isn't it? They have brain matter from Charles J. Guiteau, who assassinated President Garfield.
Oh, they have a lot of the assassins.
I know. I think that like some of these are so interesting. I would say that the display that I would most like to see is called Chevalier Jackson Foreign Body Collection. And it is 2,374 inhaled or swallowed objects removed from a patient's respiratory system by Dr. Jackson over his like 75-year career. So all of these were removed from like either like the back of the throat, the larynx, the lungs even. And it includes stuff like Jack's toys, like, you know, Jack's.
Oh, of course. It's so like spiky things.
Yeah. Monopoly pieces. I saw like, I think like the top hat was the one in there.
Oh, no!
An open safety pin. Which,
How did that happen?
I don't know. I guess, you know, like when people are sewing, they put like the needles in their mouths to hold it for a sec.
God. Yeah, you're right. Oh my God, I accidentally breathed in.
There's a small Christmas tree ornament was found in someone's lungs.
Oh,
a ball bearing, like, you know, like a small little ball bearing. And also, this is my favorite one, a whistle. And it just, it reminds me of, you know, that scene in Frosty the Snowman where it's like the train conductor and he's like blowing the whistle and he's like, no, Alaska. And then like Frosty talks and he like swallows the whistle and he's like, whoop! And he's like whistling.
Yes.
You know the scene I'm talking about?
I bet that's exactly what it reminds me of. Yeah. The fact that these things were found in the people's like lungs. And larynxes, like how did they survive? Like that
who
would
knows? Hurt, like,
what a weird sensation that would be.
I know, but it's like over 2,300 different objects, and they have. If you're interested, I had a blast doing this last night. They have a like. What do you call it? Like a catalog online. So if you just go in and you type in like Chevalier or like foreign body, all of the different foreign bodies will pop up. So you can like scroll through them, and like a lot of them are like a piece of meat or like you know, like normal stuff. But like then there's also you come across stuff like a safety pin, you know?
So question for you, did you ever inhale something that you shouldn't have?
Yes. Why? You definitely know this story too. I'm trying to decide if you're setting me up for this.
No, I'm not. Well, I thought I remembered that you had something up your nose and or, yeah, your nose. But
No, that was not me. But I know who you're thinking of. I had a neighbor growing up and we were very good friends. And one day I went over to her house and her little brother was like, you know, just hanging out with us and like whatever. And like, as a joke, stuck a raisin up his nose.
Oh my God. Yes. And I remember that.
In the emergency room and get that removed. But my story is, you know, like 2 weeks before I graduated college, I was studying for finals.
Oh my God. I hate this story. I hate this story.
This is a horrible story. But, I was studying for like a final in the engineering building, and I was eating like a chicken burrito bowl, and a piece of chicken like went down the wrong pipe, and I could feel it was like stuck in my throat. So I went out into the hallway to like fill my water bottle up, and I took a sip of water out in the hallway, and it knocked like the piece of chicken into a place where I just couldn't breathe.
Oh my God, I hate.
And I really like, I am not one to cause a scene like at all. But I literally couldn't breathe. And there were these two men like talking in the hallway. Yeah. And I'm like losing my vision. I'm like on my hands and knees. And there's two men in the hallway, like probably no more than like 20, 30 feet from me. And I like crawled over to them like on the ground and like made the universal sign for choking. And the one guy, thank God, gave me the Heimlich maneuver, and like the chicken came flying out, and it was, you know, not, and I was like horrified. I was like, oh my God, thank you so much. And I like ran to the bathroom, like had to compose myself. But yeah, that was definitely like, oh yeah, totally. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh my God.
Oof. Yeah. Right. I know. Cause I don't know what would have happened. So anyway, thank you to that guy at Villanova. You really you saved me there. But he I know. Wow. So anyway, if I was one of Dr. Jackson's patients, they would have a piece of a chicken burrito bowl in this form. Some chicken, some black beans, you know.
One of those wet specimen, you know what I'm saying?
Ew. But anyway, yes, so I thought that was like a really interesting collection. They also have a full collection of wax models. So one of their most famous wax models is it's a model of a lady named Madame Diamanchi, and she had a human horn that was growing out of her forehead.
Okay. I feel like I'm looking this up.
I've definitely seen the picture of this wax model before. Like, I don't know where I came across it, but I saw it yesterday and I was like, definitely have seen this before. Oh, and it was removed successfully, surgically, in the early 19th century. So that's the early 1800s. Isn't that crazy?
That like wasn't even that long ago in a way. Actually, I guess it kind of was.
Well, I feel like it was way long ago because, like, they're doing amputations of her human horn on her forehead. Like, that's a head growth.
Yeah, I don't know. I have no idea why I said that. I think it was because I was distracted by the picture of this. This is crazy.
Yeah, we'll put a picture. We'll put a picture on Instagram. But
how would it get that long?
I don't know. It apparently grew for, like, 2 or 3 years. I think they said it was, like, a 2 or 3 year old growth. But like, can you imagine like being a human in like the 18th century and like a freaking horn just starts growing out of your forehead? Like, what are you gonna do? They don't have the medical.
They don't even have like a nail file probably back then.
I know, but they successfully removed it, which like, good on the doctors that did that, because that's kind of crazy.
I wonder what causes that.
I don't know. Some sort of, I'm sure, like, bone disorder. Because I believe it was bone.
Oh, this is... Oh, sun damage and cellular aging.
Ooh. All right, wow, put your sunscreen on. You heard it here first. East Coast Haunts, sun safety, SPF, yeah, daily, the people,
that,
please.
That makes me want to use sunscreen. I mean, I do use sunscreen, but that makes me want to use sunscreen more than literally almost anything else.
I'm sending it to my sister who doesn't believe in sunscreen.
Oh, well, she's going to be the next...
Madame Diamanchi.
Yeah. I was like, I can't think of the name.
Do you hear this, Hope? That could be you.
That could be you.
Anyway, so they have wax. They have wax models of like different diseases too. They have a leg with leprosy, an arm with smallpox, a larynx with carcinoma, and a penis with syphilis. So,
I do vaguely remember this. I remember the wax area really like kind of being a little bit spooky.
Yeah, I honestly feel like if I saw a leg with leprosy, like, that would definitely cause, like, the feeling of general unease that I was talking about earlier. I don't know why leprosy freaks me out so much, but it does.
We're starting to see why people have that feeling of unease, even if it's not haunted.
Totally. They also have a body on display. She's known as the Soap Lady. And she was exhumed in 1875, and the body is, like, coated in this, I don't want to call it, like, a material, but it's coated in something called adipocere. It forms in, like, alkaline, like, soils, and basically it's, like, just this, like, fatty thing, and it resembles soap, so that's why they call her the Soap Lady. But it was it like formed around her body as she was decomposing, and it's kind of rare, so
okay. And it was soapy.
Yeah, like it's like a fatty substance like soap is.
Interesting. Okay.
Like, you know, soap is made
and
of fat.
And it's her actual body, it's not like a replica.
From what I could see, it was her exhumed body. So,
wow.
And she supposedly died of yellow fever back in like the 1790s.
Okay. Oh wow. So long time ago.
Oh, actually, that's what they assumed it the first time. But then they took an X-ray of her body beneath the layer of the fatty substance, and on her clothes were buttons that weren't manufactured until like the early 1800s, so like the 1830s.
Okay.
So isn't that kind of interesting? Like, they were able to like say, oh no, we were wrong because of like the buttons on her clothing that were preserved by the fatty substance. Isn't that interesting?
Wow. I guess it preserved a lot of things very well, because if it could preserve buttons and her entire body, like, that's crazy.
Very interesting stuff. Okay, and then in addition to that, like, just a couple more neat things. They do have a medicinal plant garden, which was planted in honor of Dr. Benjamin Rush, who pushed for the presence of a medicinal garden during the founding of the College of Physicians in Philadelphia. And while that was being founded, it was like 1787, and the garden was planted in 1937. But he was a big advocate for like holistic medicine and like students being able to stock their own stores. So they have like medicinal herbs in there that were of free use to people at the college, which was really nice.
Oh, it's very nice.
And just as a little ending note, if you liked what you heard here today, if you want more in-depth information, during the pandemic in 2020, the Mutter Museum started their very own podcast, and it's called My Favorite Malady.
Oh! And
you should go check it out, because they do have some really neat episodes. And yeah, I mean, if you're into medical anomalies, I feel like that would
be right
fun to check out. So, That is the Lunar Museum. I know. I totally forgot about it, and I totally forgot my headphones at work today. And so I was like, I was all ready to like listen to a podcast or whatever, and I could not.
That is genuinely,
which is so sad,
the most disappointing feeling.
That's what I'm saying. So, yeah, they've got some cool episodes. It looks like they stopped doing it in 2021, but there's a couple of good episodes in here. They've got Trench Mouth, which I'm not sure what that is, but I don't know if I want to find out. Fossy Jaw.
Okay, I've heard that phrase before.
Glowy Poop.
Oh. Oh.
So, yeah. Anyway, on that note, that's all we got about the Mutter Museum, but
kind of fun and kind of different from what we usually do, but super interesting, I thought.
Definitely. This is like, again, like I was saying, like totally like morbid curiosity, macabre-esque. So I feel like anyone who likes the paranormal will like this episode. We'll make sure to do a super haunted one next, though.
Yes. Well, yes, of course.
And again, like, if you guys have any suggestions, if you want to hear us cover a certain place, feel free to DM us on Instagram. We are at east.coast.haunts. And you can always email us with any personal stories at east.coast.haunts@gmail.com. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. And yeah, that's it. We'll just plug the socials for now. And we're also on all your favorite streaming services, so that's good too. We're also on YouTube, which I know I mentioned a while back, but if anyone prefers to listen to us on YouTube.
We got a little bit of everything.
Anyway, we truly do. We're a very well-rounded podcast. But until next time, we're just two ghouls creeping it real.
Bye.
Bye.